this gentleman. I actually had a chance to deal with him up at the Capitol when I was in the office. We're going to be talking to Attorney Andrew Matthews, the Executive Director of the Connecticut State Police. Retired trooper, that's correct, Andrew?
Yes, sir. Retired sergeant and executive director of the Connecticut State Police Union. We represent about 934 troopers, sergeants, and master sergeants.
So you've been good for you for retiring, and you're obviously practicing law. Is this your primary sort of responsibility at this point, representing the men and women of the Connecticut State Police?
Yes, sir. I was the former president of 8 years in my last 8 years on the job and transitioned into continuing to represent the good men and women that wear our uniform.
I got to tell you, it's what a challenge the careers that people choose to get in law enforcement today. And you chose your pathway into law enforcement clearly and did your time. How do you, when you look back and reflect on your career and the folks that are coming in, do you ever sit back and just go, wow, I mean, the things that are going on, the pushback against law enforcement, defunding, all these conversations, do you ever just take a deep breath and try to just figure out why these things are happening?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for your support while you were a legislator and the members of the public that continue to support law enforcement during these difficult times. I think a lot of it has to do with political agendas. Talk about defunding police. We used to have 1,283 troopers in 2009 under the Malloy administration. We currently, with our command staff, sit at about 970. So, you know, this has been an ongoing issue for us and slowly eroding the numbers of troopers that are available for service to the public in Connecticut for, you know, over the last decade. So I do think that the rhetoric and the harassment, I would call it harassment and provoking troopers, is just some of the politicians, both on a national level and in the state of Connecticut, have created an atmosphere where people take pleasure in harassing and provoking law enforcement, specifically our troopers that we represent, and just make the job really uncomfortable. I don't know that many people that we talk to now, we see troopers retire immediately when they're first eligible at 20 years of service. Mm-hmm. Since the Police Accountability Bill passed in July of 2020, we've seen 115 troopers retire in just 1 year from July to July. And we're seeing a trend where in the past troopers have stayed on the job longer than 20 years for the financial stability and the enjoyment of the career and profession and dealing with the public. And a lot of people are choosing to leave a lot earlier now.
Isn't it disappointing? I mean, obviously you loved your career and you're still a part of it. I remember our discussions were always a passionate, you know, representation of your rank and file folks. How much of the political, you talked a little bit about in that kind of the narrative of the world we live in today, but how much of that narrative plays out here in Connecticut, in your opinion, throughout Connecticut? We see these carjackings, for example, of young youth, and it seems like there's been a slow response from some political elected folks, and some are trying to make it like it's almost, it's just joyriding. But yet Connecticut state troopers, like other professional men and women in uniform, are going after these bad guys, and they're trying to do their jobs, but it seems like they're being sort of crippled along the way.
Yeah, it's a great question. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this on behalf of the troopers in the field, but the frustrating thing is they feel as though they're handcuffed in the field, whether it's asking for identification from a passenger who may be wanted for a warrant or is a respondent on a protective or restraining order with the female that's operating the car. You can't do that anymore. Some of the Democrats believe that, you know, a stolen car is just a property crime. As we all know, it leads to much bigger and more serious crimes. And, you know, they have policies and laws now that prevent us from pursuing people on property crimes. So in the past, when troopers were extremely excited about coming to work every day and being highly motivated and being productive and going out there and doing self-initiated work to protect society, I think they're a little more hesitant now with the discussion about qualified immunity and liability. And so that really affects people when they go to work. It affects our recruitment, and it affects our ability to retain senior qualified, like, people to stay around and teach the newer, younger troopers coming on the job as well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It must be a really big concern. Obviously, the concern is, you know, the numbers are down. And when you started taking some numbers and notes here, and, you know, you talked about the 1,200 of staffing, and you talk about the early retirement. But in 2022, if I remember correctly, because I sat through some public safety meetings with you, up there at the Capitol. 2022 is a date when almost half of the agency is eligible to retire.
Yeah, I believe we're in July, effective July 1 of 2022. There's some pension and health care changes in the state employees bargaining coalition agreement. And we have probably, my guess is somewhere in the neighborhood of just north of 200, maybe 250 left. Back 3 years ago, we had about 401 that were eligible. I think many of those people have already left to move on to other jobs. So we have the potential in the next less than a year of losing another over 200 troopers to avoid loss of benefit in retirement.
This is amazing. And I don't think people can rationalize. And maybe to paint the picture for the folks that are listening here on WICC 600, and we appreciate you doing that. And again, the attorney, Andrew Matthews, who's called in, represents the Connecticut State Police in his position. And I think it's an important subject. 169 towns, the Connecticut's not a big state, but it's big enough. Some of these troopers are out on roads in Bethel or out in the hills, out of Troop A, and they're responding all by themselves with counts that are, most cases, they're already cut in half from their needs for responding or officers on duty. How are we going to – I mean, this sounds like we're going to be in an emergency in 2022 if we don't fix this problem, Andrew.
Yeah, it really needs to be addressed. I think the commissioner and colonel have tried their best to, through the legislature's approval of funding for classes. We had about 137 people hired beginning of this year. There's 103 recruits that graduate that are left that graduate in August. But yeah, the troopers in the field, we're working in the staffing levels on patrol of the 1970s and 80s for many of our troops. So there is a concern about, the quickness of backup, but for the most part, they've done a really good job at trying to make sure that patrol is properly staffed, but it's the units that used to do other work that we don't do anymore because we just don't have the proper staffing. But patrol, the public can be assured that our agency does a really great job and our troopers, but our troopers are exhausted too because we don't have enough volunteers because of the effects of police accountability and the anti-police movement. What's happened is years ago, you would volunteer to come in to work. Now our members aren't volunteering as much, so a lot of our troopers are getting ordered in at a much higher rate than they ever have before, and they're just, they're tired and exhausted, and we just don't want to see people get hurt, and that could possibly happen.
I got to go to a quick break. Will you stay with me? Because I have a couple questions, and the questions are pertinent to how we can helpfully help you as Connecticut State Troopers doing your job. And again, if you'll stay with us, we'll do that right after the break. Thanks for listening, guys. WICC 600. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back. Welcome back here. And we are on the phone and having a great conversation on WICC 600. This is Kevin Allen filling in. And I'm here talking with attorney Andrew Matthews, executive director of Connecticut State Police Union, and he's a retired sergeant from Connecticut State Police. Getting into a little bit about some of the things going on with the Connecticut State Police as they serve all 169 communities, not directly, but through the highway systems and communities. How many actual towns are the resident trooper program now currently serving in?
I believe we have 57 resident trooper towns, but we cover 81 of some of the towns don't have a resident trooper program. We cover 81 of the 169 towns.
So that's where the small town sort of relationship with the community, obviously the Connecticut State Police, we know the colors in Connecticut. We know when we see the uniform. Do you feel a sense when you're talking to the rank and file, and again, the Connecticut State Police, just like every other law enforcement professional across this country, they've been kicked in the teeth over the last year plus in a political attack that really wasn't anything to do with them. But do you feel the morale here? Is it up as best as it can be? I know they're holding their heads high, but is there a breaking point in sight for these guys?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I think morale has been significantly affected by the negative news media and some of the attacks. And I mean, our troopers sometimes show up at scenes and they're literally physically attacked and people repeat things they see on the news. And I won't get into specifics, but our job's hard enough without all that. I think one of the things that we're trying to do for our members to give them some assurances, whether the employer believes they need it or not, is we're in the process of retaining professional liability insurance for them so that they and their families don't have to worry about all the news media and all the allegations of that they could lose everything just doing the job they love doing and caring for the communities like they do. So
it's a sad state when you actually have to self-insure the men and women.
Yeah. Who, yeah.
You know, that's
yeah.
not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will tell you, the public has been really helpful. A lot of times just, you know, when troopers are watching the news and feeling attacked, it's always good to have, you know, there's a lot of people in public that say hello or say thank you or send a quick note to their commanding officer or the colonel or commissioner and tell them what a great job a trooper does. And, you know, troopers are human, too. And they really appreciate the support from people. Just simply saying hello to them once in a while is pretty positive. So.
Well put. And again, on the phone with us, very, very appreciative that Attorney Andrew Matthews took time today, Executive Director of the Connecticut State Police Union and a retired sergeant here from Connecticut. Let me ask you, we talked a little bit earlier on, you know, the whole political climate. And let me, not to put you in a political hot seat, but we always typically hear this same sort of thing every election season. Republicans want to kill the unions. They want to kill contracts. You kind of talked about the 2022. What would you tell those Republicans that are going to be up in Hartford? You know, guys, work with us so we can fix this for everybody in Connecticut from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question, and I'm always honest with you in the press, and is that, you know, the difficulty in the past is we've supported friends that were Democrats, long history of supporting collective bargaining and benefits and wages. And this most recent time period of the last year and a half to, you know, has really destabilized that relationship, and it showed us that we felt attacked by the people that considered themselves, we considered friends. And the one thing I'll say about Republicans is they're very pro-law enforcement and the protection of society, and that part our members really can identify with. But the one thing that the advice I could give to your Republican friends is, you know, when we start talking about benefits and wages for troopers that risk their life, and we have 24 troopers that have been killed in the line of duty, two in the past 2 years that have given their life for the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. When I was president, we lost three troopers while I was president over an 8-year period. That's pretty hurtful. And when people say that, you know, we need to take or get concessions or not give you proper wage increases for the risk that you take, that sometimes affects our ability to support them as candidates. So, you know, being open and honest, like you asked, that's my advice. Like, there's got to be a way that they can recognize the sacrifices that the troopers and their families make and the risks that they take performing the job.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm no longer serving in public. I talk for a living, but I will say that no matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, if you want my support, you got to understand you have to support the men and women in blue, and that's just my flat out bottom line. And that's if they awesome. Don't do it completely, then we'll look for an alternative source of you know, for somebody else to vote in. You know, you got a lot of great guys and men and women out there serving. Let me ask you a little bit about the climate with the minority, you know, sort of uprising in this country with the divided conversations. Do you see an uptick in the minority employment coming in as far as new troopers? Is there new classes, and is there an emphasis on going after candidates with different cultures?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think that's pretty obvious that that's not just here in Connecticut, but around the country. That is a focus, not just minorities, but our female, Caucasian female members, which apparently they don't consider minority status here in Connecticut. Seems strange to me. But, yeah, I think there's a focus, and I think there's you've seen that in our agency. I think they've really worked hard over the last decade that I've been around, 14 years or so, where they were actively going out and trying to recruit minorities because they're trying to have a more diverse body policing the communities, and which is a fair, you know, objective. So, but yeah, there has been an increase. I think there's a movement to do 30% females by the year 2030. That's a movement going around the country from a national troopers level, national troopers coalition level. We see a lot of that. So, yeah, that's the movement that's out there right now.
100%. It seems like that is the times we live in. And again, I want to say thank you, Attorney Andrew Matthews, Executive Director of the Connecticut State Police Union, retired sergeant with the Connecticut State Police, sharing some of your thoughts and your time. And please don't be a stranger, not just to this station, but you and I will talk offline. We'll continue to share Attorney Matthews, any stories that we can do to help the Connecticut State Police and the men and women, please let me be a voice box for you. Anything you can direct people where they can find you or anything that they can go to maybe help and support your causes?
The State Police Union has a website. We have a line of duty death fund. We really appreciate the public support and yours. And we hope all you and your listeners are safe and their families are healthy and safe. And if they could just remember, if they see a trooper or law enforcement or first responder on the side of the highway, if they can safely move over to give them room to do their job, that is really helpful and thoughtful, prevent injury and death.
I can say I proudly voted for that bill, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Man.
Thank you so much. Hey, I will
you're
talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Hey,
right,
guys. Great. Thank you, Andrew. And so WICC 600, we're going to get going to a break here pretty soon, but I got to tell you, what a great conversation, folks. We got to hear from the he not only served as a sergeant in the Connecticut State Police, now as an attorney, he's practicing, but he's also defending the men and women in blue as part of his practice. And I think that's a pretty amazing story. Great conversation. Connecticut State Police, folks, they are some of the best in the country. They deserve our love and respect, as all law enforcement do. And I hope you maybe will want to call in and chime in on this this conversation we just had on WICC 600. And I've been wanting to interview this guy for a while. Brendan Saunders, he ran for Senate here in the state of Connecticut. He's a public speaker, political commentator, host of his own show, The Fusion Podcast. Brendan, you got the greatest voice I ever hear on radio. So how you doing, man?
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that. And yes, I do have to publicly apologize because you have been trying to track me down forever.
I feel like I finally met my celebrity dream here. You know, you're my my crush, and I finally got a chance to chat with Brendan because he's a celebrity. He's a big rock star, and it's all good, man. We're all busy. You're doing your thing, and you ran for office in the state of Connecticut for state senator. And was that once or twice? And I apologize, I haven't been caught up here on the notes.
That's okay. Just once. I was a crazy rookie out there trying to take down the big man. You know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That year you ran. Actually, was that the year that Kennedy stepped down and you actually had an open seat between you and the other guy, right?
No, I wish that had been the case. The funny thing is, I've been busy kind of behind the scenes in politics to whatever degree for almost 20 years, but I've always been a behind the scenes guy, and I've always kind of did it as it fit my particular schedule at that time. And I always said, you know, if I ever were to run, especially in this state, which we know is so dominated by Democrats, I said, you know, if I were to run, I would never talk about words that you're going to eat. I would never run against an incumbent. So there I was, running against an incumbent.
Right, right. Well, hey, man, sometimes that opportunity opens its door, and you got to take the challenge. And you did well. I hope you came away from that experience feeling proud about what you'd put on the table.
I did now. In the days, you know, I run to win. You know what I mean?
100%. I'm with you, man.
I'm all about competition, and I feel that there's a lot at stake. And so initially, in the days after the loss, I was very upset, very frustrated. But so many people, it just blows me away. And you know, you're someone who serves, so you get this. But when people come up to you and they're like, you know, I voted for you, I supported you, so sorry that you lost, and I hope that you didn't get a sour taste, and I hope you'll do this again. And it's like that picked me up to say, okay, we got something. We got 29,000 votes for me. We went into this thing thinking if we could get 25,000 votes, we might have a chance to beat this guy. We got almost 29,000 votes to his 30. And so we're 31, I want to say, but it was a close run.
You ran one of the closest races that year. You're bringing it back to my memory. I apologize; it's hard to stay up on every one of the races. But you actually had a close race. It was down to a couple thousand, if not a little less than 2,000 votes.
Yep. And listen, like I said, in perspective, I realized, wow, that was a great run for somebody who basically was an unknown. Mm-hmm. I hadn't served in any public office up to that point, so I'm an unknown. But, you know, in my head, I was living that thing, man.
So let me ask you now. Needleman was the senator who ran against you, right? The current senator there, and Needleman is a pretty. Listen, I'm all for wealth, but it was like a Goliath, Samson and Goliath situation here. He had a pretty much war chest to go against you, right?
Yeah. So if you were going to choose people not to run against, one would be an incumbent. Second would be a person who can self-fund his own campaign. He doesn't need the CEP funding. Right. So I was privy to $100,000 of CEP funding, public funding, while he could just write a check. Mm-hmm. And he had won that position 2 years earlier, had spent $580,000 to barely win that position by 80 votes. That was when it was a vacant position.
Yeah.
And so now, 2 years later, I go up against him, and he spent a minimum of $350,000 to defeat me by 2,000. So, yeah, it definitely was going against Goliath.
Well, you did something right, though. And obviously, again, on the line with us is Brendan Saunders. He's and the area that you ran in is that Clinton, or where is that actually at?
Oh, my goodness. It is. I've been told that geographically it's the largest district of the state Senate districts. It's actually 12 towns.
Yep.
It does cover the shoreline, Clinton, Westbrook, Old Saybrook, Essex, Chester, Deep River, Iverton. But it also crosses over to East Haddam, East Hampton, Portland, Lyme, Colchester, and then swing back over one more time for Haddam.
Jesus.
And I think I got all 12 of them there. And
you get dizzy driving around that district, for crying out loud, Brent. What do you do in real life? I know you got the podcast now. I know you're still staying active in public, the political scene. What do you do, during the day? You just...
So in real life, I am the director of sales and marketing for a hotel, the Courtyard Marriott Hotel in Cromwell, Connecticut. So
nice.
I do actually apologize if I'm going in and out. I'm wandering around the building right now trying to find a good spot.
You're fine. When you spade out, I'll just start talking. So we'll just feed off each other really well. So you got a real job. You're a real guy. You also have a real love for your state. You kind of mentioned how you said, if I ever do this and all these other things. But, it takes a special commitment to even want to consider that. I went through that experience myself, and the day my toes went on that threshold, I kind of realized, ooh, I want to go back to being first selectman. It was safe there. But now you're going to do this again. Is that right? Is the cat out of the bag here? You've talked publicly. You're planning to do it, right?
The cat is not out of the bag.
All right, let's make the announcement. It's a big – listen, I'm trying out this job. Maybe they'll give me a – if I break this, they might give me a full-time job at the 600 station. Come on, Brendan. Give me a bone.
Yes. You're supposed to build me or trick me into making the public announcement.
I won't trick you, man.
I have not made a public announcement. I have made it very clear that I do wish to run again at some point for some position, but I have not yet decided where, when, what, and how yet. But, yes.
Well, I think I got to tell you, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. The way you handle yourself, honestly, I wouldn't agree with all your policies if you're a Democrat. But your attitude is one of the most refreshing attitudes out of anyone I've come across. I'm going to tell you who you remind me of, Brendan. You remind me of the person who replaced me, and that's Brian Lanoux up in the 45th District. Brendan, okay. We're going to be going to a quick break. Can you hold 2 seconds during this break? I'm going to bring you back. Sure. I want to talk about the state of Connecticut and the state of Connecticut after this break on WICC 600. All right. Here we are back at the WICC 600 station. It's Kevin Allen filling in. We got Brendan Saunders on the line. Yep, this is the guy I've been dreaming about. I got a lot of people on my list. Joe Rogan was one of them. Then it was Brendan Saunders, and I got the interview today. So I feel like I've accomplished something in life, Brendan Saunders.
Hey, you need to get a better list.
I know, huh, man? Listen, if you had won, right, you would have been up in Hartford. And if you had won, and I don't mean to be, this is just reality-based, you would have been in a unprecedented time. COVID would have hit. Would have had the divide of the George Floyd issue that took place last year during that whole situation. And even the continuous the backlash of some of those defunding conversations taking place throughout Connecticut and the nation. But you also would have been there to either support or fight against executive power for the governor of Connecticut. How would your opinion of this, and how would you have handled it?
Yeah, I you know, when executive power was first handed to him, as I remember, it was for 6 months. I felt that that was appropriate. Everything beyond that has not been, in my opinion, especially the most recent extension that was given. We are clearly at a point in which we're coming out of this, and some of the decisions, even now that he's that the governor has spoke of making, he has said, "Well, I'm not going to decide this yet. First, I'm going to talk to some folks, and then I may, you know, even run this by the legislature and all that." Well, that was the point from the beginning, was to make sure that the elected officials were in the room. The fact of the matter is, the elected officials can tell you what's going on in their districts. They're the ones who can tell you. I believe even from the beginning, they were the ones who could have been making it very clear to the governor that when things were shut down, that, hey, this is really hurting businesses in this way, and be able to speak towards that. Instead, they were left out of the room. They continue to be left out of the room, unless, of course, a special session is called to push, to ramrod something that the Democrats deem important through. Then we can have special sessions, and then we can put them in the room. But other than that, you know, we're left to this system, which, as I said, at this point, it has certainly overrun its time.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you at all. And I also think that it's interesting that this governor now, as we were coming out of the situation, and of course, there are probably going to be a lot of folks on that side, meaning the governor's side or the Democratic House and Senate, that are going to say, well, we got COVID coming back. He needs to have these powers, and he needs to have it for the financial windfall from the federal government. Do you buy into that part of the story?
No, again, I don't. It's funny because I actually think that part of the reason why you are seeing him now sort of deferring some of these decisions and at least trying to give the picture that he's letting others into the room is because he realizes that ultimately he's going to have to answer for this, right? Mm-hmm. It was all well and good a year ago, but election season will be coming around the corner. And now we're reaching a point where people are going to remember what he's decided. And from what I'm understanding, his approval ratings, which have been sky high throughout all this, are starting to show. They're starting to dip. And right. So now suddenly it's convenient for him to both have the power but say, oh, you know, I'm gonna work with the legislators. Really, I personally think that that's just about being able to pass the buck at some point.
And I wouldn't argue that point either. And, you know, the only thing that Brendan Saunders and I are going to debate is he's a Yankee fan, and I'm a Red Sox fan.
I'm so sorry for that.
Exactly. Thank you, Eric, for throwing that in there. How long you – why are you on the wrong team? Huh? Hey, come on. Wake up. You know the Red Sox are better. Come on. You're in that part of the state, too. You're right at the border of Red Sox territory, man.
Yeah, I am. I've always considered the Connecticut River to be the dividing line.
It is.
And
it is.
I am west of the Connecticut River, so
yeah. Okay.
I'm right on that line. But I think that you're just jealous that we got Anthony Rizzo and
oh,
you
yeah.
didn't, because you guys needed him. But
yeah.
Ball game over. Yankees
win. Ah, there it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't do that. We got a producer here being a wise guy, Eric. Anyways, hey, Brendan Saunders, you won't commit to running again here, and I respect that. I think you did say the commitment was that at some point you will commit to considering that run at some point for something. And there's many opportunities in Connecticut. In 2022, not only will the Senate position you could run for again, you could run for a state rep in your district if you choose, although you have some great people up that way. You also could run for governor. You want to run for governor?
I have a contingent of folks, crazy fanatics who are drinking some sort of weird water, who want me to run for governor. Mm-hmm. I'm nowhere near that. But what I will say is that, and I'm just a tiny bit of a friend with Bob Stefanowski, who ran previously. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I often talk with him and others who are higher ups in the Connecticut Republican Party is about this message. What are we communicating? I mean, we have allowed the narrative of what Republicans are, racist and otherwise, to be foisted on us and on people for so long without speaking back and without, in layman's terms, communicating what exactly our values are. What does it mean that it, when we say that we're for less government, but what is the value to that to the everyday person? And so all that to say that if I were to ever run for governor, I think one of the things that I would look forward to is actually going to our urban centers, going to the New Londons, the New Havens, the Bridgeports, the Hartford, and speaking. And that, now, obviously you didn't say this when you announced me, but I'm a black man.
Brendan, I want you to hear me on this one because I think it's important. And we're winding down, and you brought up a really – I would not do that because you're a man and you're a Republican, and I'm talking to you, and it doesn't matter about the black or white to me. I'm sorry. It doesn't.
I hear you, and I don't discount that. But what I'm saying is that this is my personal observation.
Yep.
Is that for far too long, Republicans at the national, state, and local level have not been willing to engage this conversation with those living in our urban cities. And they, as we all know, are predominantly black.
Right.
And you don't have to be a black man to have this conversation.
Right.
But somebody in this party ought to be having this conversation in which we are willing to share what exactly our values are and how our policy, specifically how our policy, I'll say this on the way out because I know you don't have time. You know, let's take the minimum wage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we fight about how high should the minimum wage, how low should it be. Listen, I believe that if government is doing what it ought to be doing, you should never have to worry about the minimum wage.
Sure.
Because the government has put an atmosphere in the state and in the communities that is fostering so much job creation that the last thing that you have to worry about is, oh, goodness, are they going to raise the minimum wage for me or not? Because you are going to have opportunity to go to multiple jobs, to have many jobs that will pay you far above that. I want far above the minimum wage for you. And that's a message that needs to go to the cities. It needs to go to every socioeconomic status in the state.
You know what, Brendan Saunders? I just drank the Kool-Aid as well. I am on the team, Brendan Saunders, for governor of Connecticut 2022. Let's get this campaign moving. And listen, I'm going to reach out to you. I got your now I got your cell. I'm going to stalk you, so don't worry about it. I'm going to reach back out to you. We're going to talk again. Brendan Saunders, thank you so much for coming on today on WICC 600. This is Kevin Allen filling in for Paul Pacelli. Connecticut Today, WICC 600. We have Bob Stefanowski on the line. Bob, I'm sorry to put you on hold so long, but how are you doing?
No worries. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No, I appreciate having you on, and I'm sure the listeners down here in WICC world, they're loving you, man. I know you got a lot of you already had some call-outs. I don't know if you know this, but Brendan Saunders, he basically bestowed you the next governor.
Well, we need Brendan as the next senator. He's got to take out Norm Needleman.
Yeah, that's right.
He ran a great campaign, good guy, and he should be up in Hartford.
You know, he got into, and before I kind of get into asking you, I want to ask you, he brought up a point about the next generation of Republican candidates, especially those ones that want to run again, but those ones that are going to jump in. You got to be brave enough to go into those basements in inner cities and talk to people, you know, different than you are. Republicans can't just talk to the same community. They got to get out there. You believe that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, some of the things you hear in the cities, and Amy and I were involved in, my wife Amy and I were involved in a charity where we handed out a bunch of masks, and much of that was in the cities. And a lot of the values that Republicans bring in terms of fiscal responsibility and creating jobs and, you know, creating a future for people, better education, those values are very aligned with people in the cities, but they say, we never see you guys. So how are we supposed to vote for you if you're never here? And they're very upset because people like Governor Lamont come out one time a year, mm-hmm. at election time. He makes a bunch of promises, and then they never see him again. So I don't think Democrats have helped their cities, and I think it's time for a change. But we got to spend some time there, to your point.
Yeah, it's a very good point, and Brenda brought it up, so I asked it. And I appreciate, again, Bob Stefanowski, you ran for governor against Ned Lamont, 2018. But prior to that, you have a very successful business career. You're an executive. You've GE, right, and a couple other companies. You have that great experience. Did you get involved in the run for governor because of your really solid background in the economic side of the broken Connecticut with obviously an economy that just struggles because of the overtaxation and the overburden from government? Were you there to try to fix it? Is that why you ran?
Well, we went over to, we actually lived in London for a while. I was the chief financial officer of UBS Bank, the investment bank, and we came back and it was like, holy cow, what's happened to this state? I grew up in New Haven. I've lived here my entire life. My dad is 92. He still lives in the same house we grew up in North Haven, Connecticut.
Awesome.
And I just thought it was time to do something. And the problem is spending is just absolutely out of control in our state, whether it's the pension plan for state employees, whether it's the programs that are out there and hiring out-of-state consultants to do the work our legislators should be doing. And coming out of CFO, we took $1 billion of cost out of UPS. And with a $24 billion budget for Connecticut, if we can't find 5% of that budget, then we're doing something wrong. But Democrats, they just want to keep spending and keep taxing, and people are getting tired of it.
Definitely good points. And we talked to Ryan Fazio, who's running down for the special election for Senate. He brought up some of the same very points, and we actually talked a little detail in regards to how we can help fix Connecticut. And actually, after that interview, we had Andy Matthews, Attorney Matthews, who actually is now a retired state trooper, who is now actually in the rank as an attorney for the union. And, he came out there, and I asked him a question, and I'm going to share it with you, and I'd love to hear your response. So many of the folks that support law enforcement are conservative Republicans. But we lose that opportunity to build that bridge as Republicans, as a former state rep. I know this personally. When we actually talk about the fiscal responsibility, so I think people hear like we're blaming union members for bad decisions by lawmakers. I'd just like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, anybody who's a first responder, police officers, fire, emergency services, they're out there doing yeoman's work every day, and they're putting their life on the line for us. So, for example, the police accountability that Governor Lamont signed last year needs to be changed. Taking qualified immunity away from officers and painting everyone with the same brush, I think, is unacceptable. And because of that, we're seeing a lot of people that are probably going to take early retirement. Right. I think, and it's a fair point that state employees, they contributed into these plans religiously for years. And a bunch of governors, including a couple Republican governors, didn't put the money away. So I'm very sympathetic to the argument. But when you have a plan, that's $70 billion underfunded, you got to do something. And you got to protect people's retirement. And you have to treat people fairly. But we're not doing state employees any benefit by pretending that money is going to be there when we know it's not. So there needs to be a solution that treats everybody fairly.
How could you? What would you throw out to people that are on the fence about maybe if you do run again and you're looking that way and you're going to run, if they want to support Bob Stefanowski, they're a union state employee or a union worker who supports that, how could you convince them that you can actually work through these details, it won't hurt them, and we can all do it together?
Well, I think there was a lot of fear-mongering last time, and Governor Lamont, who obviously had the support of the unions, although he's starting to lose the support of the law enforcement unions, raised a lot of fear. We are not looking to do anything dramatic. You have to protect people that are already retired. You have to protect the money that people put away. But going forward, there's not a lot of people in the world that are still on a defined benefit plan. They're pretty much out of vogue right now. So I think going forward, you have to start moving people to 401k plans. So, and maybe it's on an optional basis, but you have to protect people that have been guaranteed money. But you also have to start to do something different going forward for new employees. And I think you can find the right balance.
Bob Stefanowski on the line with us. We're going to be respectful of your time. I know you're busy, and we don't want to, take too much from your day, but it's the end of the day, actually. But would you, if you were in power as the governor of Connecticut, you had, magic wand it, you're there, would you have extended or even asked for executive powers like this current governor, Ned Lamont, has?
Well, if you go back to the start, you could argue it, right? We didn't know really a lot about this pandemic. For a while, we thought things like touching a countertop could get it to you. We didn't know how long contagious it was. But now we know so much more. There is absolutely no reason in the world for Governor Lamont to have emergency authority. And again, I never fault somebody going on a vacation, but the guy's taken 3 vacations this summer. If we're in a state of emergency, he shouldn't be heading off to vacation. He should be focused on the emergency.
Who's he handing the keys off to, Bob?
Democracy back and get our representatives who we elected to watch out for our interests back in session and get some input.
It's a great point. Who's he handing the keys when he goes on vacation? Do you know?
Well, it's the lieutenant governor.
Oh, okay. Susan Bicewitz.
We've got to get the legislature in here to have some input.
I don't think people in Connecticut realize how much that has stifled the process to be heard. Your voices, 169 towns, 3.5 million people. We expect our voices to be heard. You know, we're coming down to a turn here, and I don't know if you want to hang or if you want to maybe we can touch base with you later on at some point. I don't want to be respectful of your time. You know, I'm filling in down here, Bob. WIC, I don't know if you know WICC 600. I think you've been on the station, right?
I do. Yeah, I do. And it sounds like you got a good show today with a lot of good people on.
Yeah, great people. But Paul will be back, so don't worry. Next week, I want you to call Paul. Things will be back to normal. And tell Amy I will be harassing her soon to get on, too, and talk a little bit about that masks, the program you have there. Because I unfortunately think, Bob, we're going to be back in that seat again soon if government gets their way.
Well, Kevin, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Bob. Bob Stefanowski, appreciate you coming on.